In former times, when the coast was less peopled than now, a boat's crew landed at Nook. They found no people and traversed the fjord to Kangersunek. Halfway up to the east of Cornock, near Kangusak, they came upon a large house. But on getting closer to it, they did not know what to make of the people, seeing that they were not Kalaallit. In this manner, they had quite unexpectedly come across the first Kafrunak settlers. These likewise for the first time saw the natives of the country, and treated them kindly and civilly, but the Greenlanders nevertheless feared them, and made for their boats. When the boat and its crew returned from their summer trip to the fjord, they told their countrymen all about their encounter with the foreigners, and many of them now travelled up to see them. Many boats having thus reached Kangersunek, they now began to have intercourse with the Kafrunate, seeing that they were well disposed towards them. Later on in the summer, many more Kalaallit arrived, and the foreigners began to learn their language. At Kapusilik, a Kafrunak and a Kalaallit, it is said, became such fast friends that they would not be separated, but were constantly together. They tried to excel each other at different games and feats of dexterity, and their countrymen on both sides were greatly diverted as lookers-on. But being both first-rate archers, their arrows always fell side by side. One day the Kafrunak said, "Come, let us climb up that hill, but first we will stretch a skin for a target to aim at. Then we will try which of us can hit the mark. He who fails shall be thrown down the precipice, and the other remain the conqueror." The Kalaallit answered, "No, I will not agree to that, because we are friends, and none of us shall perish." But the Kafrunak persisted so long that his own countryman at last said, "Well, let him be thrown down, as it is his only will." And they climbed the mountain together, accompanied by a crowd of spectators. The Kafrunak was the first to shoot, but altogether failed. Then the Kalaallit came in for his turn, and pierced the skin in the center. According to his own desire, the Kafrunak was hurled down the precipice, and his countrymen only thought it served him right for having thus recklessly pledged his life. From that day until the present, this mountain has been called the Shooting Place. About the 10th glass in the afternoon, the African galley, which was sailing ahead of us, lay to wait for us, making the signal of land in sight. And so when we came up with her, we asked what they had seen. On this, we were answered that they had all very distinctly seen a low and flattish island lying away to starboard, about 5.5 miles off, to the northwards and westwards. The necessary information was given to the captain, who was astern, and to the land the name of Pash Island, because it was discovered by us on Easter Day. There was great rejoicing among the people, and everyone hoped that this low land might prove to be a foretoken of the coastline of the unknown southern continent. As we had seen smoke ascending in several places, from which it might be reasonably concluded that the aforementioned island, although it may be shown to be sandy and barren, has nevertheless human inhabitants, now, therefore, the President moved that it would be culpable to proceed in a careless and negligent manner, and that we should stand off for tonight with our ships, and that on the arrival of daylight we send close into the land 2 well-manned shallops, and show all friendliness towards the inhabitants, endeavouring to see and inquire what they wear, or make use of either as ornaments for other purposes, and whether any refreshments in the way of green stuff, fruit or beasts can be procured by barter. The weather was very variable, with thunder, sheet lightning and showers. During the forenoon, Captain Bowman brought an Easter Islander on board, together with his craft, in which he had come off close to the ship from the land. He was quite nude, without the slightest covering for that which modesty shrinks from revealing. This hapless creature seemed to be very glad to behold us, and showed the greatest wonder at the build of our ship. He took special notice of the tautness of our spars, the stoutness of our rigging and running gear, the sails, the guns, which he felt all over with minute attention, and with everything else that he saw, especially when the image of his own features was displayed before him in a mirror. Seeing the which, he started suddenly back, and then looked towards the back of the glass, apparently in the expectation of discovering there to be the cause of the apparition. In the morning, we proceeded with three boats and two shallops, manned by 134 persons, all armed with musket, pistols, and cutlass. After thus disposing our forces, we marched forward a little, to make room for some of the people who were behind, that they might fall in with the ranks. Quite unexpectedly, and to our great astonishment, four or five shots were heard in our rear, together with a vigorous shout of, it's time, fire. On this, as in a moment, more than 30 shots were fired, and the Indians, being thereby amazed and scared, took to flight, leaving 10 or 12 dead, besides the wounded. After a little while, the assistant pilot of the ship came up to me, saying that he, with six other men, was the hindmost of the party, that one of the natives, laying hold of the muzzle of his piece to snatch it from him, he struck a blow, and further, that another Indian had attempted to strip the jacket off one of the seamen, and that some of the natives, seeing our men resist, picked up stones, using threatening gestures, as if to pelt us with them. After the astonishment and terror of the natives were somewhat allayed, on their seeing that our hostilities were not persisted in, they were given to know by signs that the victims had threatened to make an assault on us by stone throwing. What the form of worship of these people comprises, we were not able to gather any full knowledge of, owing to the shortness of our stay among them. We noticed only that they kindle fire in front of certain remarkably tall stone figures they set up, and thereafter, squatting on their heels with heads bowed down, they bring the palms of their hands together and alternately raise and lower them. At first, these stone figures caused us to be filled with wonder, for we could not understand how it was possible that people who are destitute of heavy or thick timber, and also of stout cordage, out of which to construct gear, had been able to erect them. Nevertheless, some of these statues were a good 30 feet in height, and broad in proportion. This perplexity ceased, however, with the discovery, on removing a piece of the stone, that they were formed out of clay, or some other kind of rich earth, and that small, smooth flints had been stuck over afterwards, which are fitted very closely and neatly to each other, so as to make up the semblance of a human figure. Moreover, one saw reaching downwards from the shoulders a slight elevation or prominence which represented the arms, for all the statues seemed to convey the idea that they were hung about with a long robe from the neck right down to the soles of the feet. They have on the head a basket, heaped up with flints, painted white, deposited in it. The country, to which I have given the name the Arctic Highlands, is situated in the northeast corner of Baffin's Bay, and towards the extremities is reduced to nothing. It is bounded on the south by an immense barrier of mountains covered with ice. This barrier is impassable, and in many places the solid ice extends for several miles into the sea from the precipices from which it is connected. The origin of the Arctic Highlanders is a question as of yet involved in peculiar obscurity. They exist in a corner of the world by far the most secluded which has yet been discovered, and have no knowledge of anything but that which originates or is found in their own country. Nor do they have any tradition how they came to this spot or from whence they came, having, until the moment of our arrival, believed themselves to be the only inhabitants of the universe, and that all the rest of the world was a mass of ice. It is generally believed by the natives of South Greenland that they are themselves descended from a nation in the north, and the moment they were discovered, our guide exclaimed, "These are Eskimo. These are our fathers." It was believed that the northern was the most ancient or most original language. The similarity of the language proves that they are the same people, and it appears most probable that South Greenland has been peopled from the north, and that the northern parts of Baffin's Bay have been in the same manner originally peopled from America. The Arctic Highlanders did not worship the sun, moon, stars, or any image, or any living creature. When asked what the sun or moon was for, they said to give light. They had no knowledge or idea how they came into being or of a future state, but said that when they died, they would be put into the ground. Having fully ascertained that this man had no idea of a supreme being, I proceeded to inquire if he believed in an evil spirit, but he could not be made to understand what it meant. The word Angakok, which means a conjurer or sorcerer, was then pronounced to him in the South Greenland Eskimo language. He said they had many of them, that it was in their power to raise a storm or make a calm and to drive off seals or bring them, that they learned this art from older Angakoks when young, that they were afraid of them, but they had generally one in every family. When this man was told that there was an omnipotent, omnipresent, and invisible being who had created the sea and land and all therein, he showed much surprise and eagerly asked where he lived. When told that he was everywhere, he was much alarmed and became very impatient to get away. When told that there was a future state and another world, he said that a wise man, who had lived long before his time, had said that they were to go to the moon, but that it was not now believed, and that none of the others knew anything of this history. They believed, however, that birds and other living creatures came from the moon. Although there is certainly no proof whatever that these people have any idea of a supreme being, or of a spirit, good or bad, the circumstances of their having conjurers, and of their going to the moon after death, are of a nature to prevent any conclusion from being drawn to that effect, especially as it must be evident that our knowledge of their language was too imperfect to obtain the whole of their ideas on the subject. In the days long past, when I was a very little boy, a vessel came to Fitianga. Our tribe was living there at the time. A vessel came there, and when our old men saw the ship, they said it was a tupua, a god, and the people on board were strange beings. The ship came to anchor, and the boats pulled on shore. As our old men looked at the manner in which they came on shore, the rowers pulling with their backs to the bows of the boat, the old people said, "Yes, it is so. These people are goblins. Their eyes are at the back of their heads. They pull on shore with their backs to the land to which they are going." When these goblins came on shore, we, the children and women, took notice of them, but we ran away from them into the forest, and the warriors alone stayed in the presence of these goblins. But as some of the goblins stayed some time and did not do evil to our braves, we came back one by one and gazed at them, and we stroked their garments with our hands, and we were pleased with the whiteness of their skin and the blue eyes of some of them. These goblins began to gather oysters, and we gave some fish and fern root to them. And as we saw that these goblins were eating fish and cockles, we were startled and said, "Perhaps they are not goblins, like the Maori goblins." We and the women gathered stones and grass of all sorts and gave these to the goblins. Some of the stones they liked and put them into their bags, the rest they threw away. And when we gave them the grass and the branches of trees, they stood and talked to us, or they uttered the words of their language. Perhaps they were asking questions, and as we did not know their language, we laughed, and these goblins also laughed, so we were pleased. The warriors and old men of our tribe sat in silence and gazed at these goblins. Now, some of the goblins had walking sticks, which they carried about with them, and when we arrived at the bare dead trees, where the shags roost at night and have their nests, the goblins lifted the walking sticks up and pointed them at the birds, and in a short time thunder was heard to crash and a flash of lightning was seen, and a shag fell from the trees, and we children were terrified and fled and rushed into the forest and left the goblins all alone. They laughed and waved their hands to us, and in a short time the bravest of us went back to where the goblins were, and handled the bird, and saw that it was dead. But what had killed it? Our old people waited in suspicion, and went back to the settlement, as also did the goblins. We were now at quiet and peace with them, and they gave us some of the food they had brought on shore with them. After the ship had been lying at anchor some time, some of our warriors went on board and saw many things there. When they came on shore, they gave our people an account of what they had seen. This made many of us desirous to go and see the home of the goblins. When we got on board the ship, we were welcomed by the goblins, whom our warriors answered in our language. We sat on the deck of the ship, where we were looked at by the goblins, who, with their hands, stroked our mats and the hair of the heads of us children. At the same time, they made much gabbling noise in talking. They held up some garments and showed them to us, touching ours at the same time. So we gave them our mats for their mats, to which some of our warriors said ka pai, which words were repeated by some of the goblins, at which we laughed, and were joined in the laugh by the goblins. One of our tribe was killed by the goblins who first came to Fitianga. This man was a noted thief and took a dogskin mat to sell to the goblins. There were five of them at the stern of the canoe and four in the bow, and this thief was with those in the stern. When they got alongside of the ship, the goblin who collected shells, flowers, tree blossoms and stones was looking over the side. He held up the end of a garment which he would give in exchange for the dogskin mat belonging to this noted thief. So the thief waved with his hand to the goblin to let some of it down into the canoe, which the goblin did. And as the goblin let some of it down into the canoe, the thief kept pulling it towards him. When the thief had got a long length of the goblin's garment before him, and beckoned with his hand to the man to give the dogskin mat up to him. But the thief did not utter a word, and began to fold up the dogskin mat with the goblin's garment into one bundle, and told his companions to paddle to the shore. The goblin went down into the hold of the ship, but soon came up with a walking stick in his hand, and pointed with it at the canoe which was paddling away. Thunder pealed and lightning flashed, but those in the canoe paddled on. When they landed, eight rose to leave the canoe, but the thief sat still with his dogskin mat and the garment of the goblin under his feet. His companions called to him, but he did not answer. One of them went and shook him, and the thief fell back into the hold of the canoe, and blood was seen on his clothing, and a hole in his back. He was carried to the settlement, and a meeting of the people was called to consult on the matter, at which his companions told the tale of the theft of the goblin's garment, and the people said, "He was the cause of his own death, and it will not be right to avenge him. All the payment he will obtain for his death will be the goblin's garment which he has stolen, which shall be left to bind around his body, where it is laid." His body was taken and put into one of the ancient cave burial places. Not any evil came from this death, and we again went to barter with the goblins of that ship, and the goblins came again and again on shore. Nor was there one evil word spoken, or any act of transgression on our part for that death.